The last two storytellers are both from both writers at Inlander magazine. So let's take a minute to applaud all of the storytellers who have already told their stories who don't write for the Inlander.
Hey, good job.
Our next storyteller is someone I also don't know or didn't know until our rehearsal a few nights ago. She also is very cool and someone I would like to know better. Her eye is set. Where is Sam? Where are you, Sam? Sam, the eye is the latter of the vowels in the latter part of your name, right? Yeah. So it's Sam Wofile. Is that correct? Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Wofile.
Yeah, I was saying it's I before E except in Wofile. All right, so by the time that five or six people had told us that we probably weren't going to get what we wanted, I was pretty sure that we'd messed up. I knew that we'd messed up when we wound up sitting in a park after midnight in a foreign country, trying to get just a little bit drunk as we figured out if we could get away with camping on the beach without getting arrested. My friend Rachel and I had been traveling all day at this point, and we had just gotten back from Morocco for a few days into Spain. And when our group got back to Spain, instead of going back to Granada with the rest of our group, which is where we were studying that fall, she and I were going to go to Cadiz. Now, Cadiz is this beautiful city in southern Spain. It sits on this little spit of land on the southern coast, and there's these rocks, like the seawall around it, that looks just like when you're a little kid and you draw a castle. And we had seen this online, and we were just so excited about this trip. And we're 20 years old, and we're world travelers. So of course, before setting out on this adventure, all we do is look up the addresses of a couple of hostels, maybe a bus schedule, and we're gonna wing it. It's all gonna work out all right. Now, we might have known that things weren't exactly gonna go right from the get-go. So we get back into town at this port city, and it's already past 8 in the evening. And we get to this bus station, and it's like 8:15, our bus leaves at 8:30, we're all good. Just in time to see the cashier putting a sign in the window that says back in 15 minutes. And so we run up and we're knocking on the glass. And we're, please, please, is there any way you could sell us our tickets before you take your break? And with all of the practiced apathy of someone who's worked in a bureaucracy for years, he completely ignores us. Like, turns his chair to the side and thumbs through his magazine for 15 minutes so he doesn't see our puppy dog eyes through the glass, ignores us. So by the time he's done with his break, 20 minutes later, we've got our cash ready, we throw it at him, we get our tickets, and we run to the bus. Now, by the time we roll into Cadiz, it's already super late. It's dark, there's not a lot of people out, and we've got our backpacks on, we're just ready to get to this hostel, right? So we start walking, and we go to the first address, and it's really cool. Like, this hostel is awesome, and there's all these young people hanging around. We're like, you're gonna be our friend, and you're gonna be our friend, and then we see the desk clerk, and she gives us that look that you don't want to see, and she's like, she's going to tell you something that you don't want to hear. She's like, sorry, we're already booked for the night, and I happen to know that the other two hostels in town are also full for tonight. Now, there is a lady down the street who has an apartment, and sometimes she lets people stay there, so I could give her a call. So we wait around, and she calls, but she had just literally right before we walked in sent two other people down to this woman's apartment. She goes, I can't take any more people, sorry. So Rachel and I look at each other and we're like, all right, well, we got this. Like, we're students, we don't have a lot of money, but we can figure this out. We'll go find a cheap hotel. So we start walking, and we go to the first hotel that we see, and we go in, and before we even get to the desk, we see that they've got a couple signs up that say, we're full for tonight. So we keep walking, and we go down the street to another hotel, and they're also full for the night. We go a little further, and we're getting farther away from downtown, and we go into a third hotel, and they're full for the night. And we're walking down the cobblestone, and we go into a fourth hotel, and a fifth hotel, and we're going into more expensive hotels, and they're all full for the night. And we're starting to realize something might be going on here, I don't know. It's the end of October and it's Halloween weekend, but Halloween is like an American holiday. It's not a thing really there. But at the 8th or 9th hotel, we find ourselves in front of this very helpful clerk whose outfit is like 100 years old. He's like in a maroon vest with the gold buttons and everything, and he explains to us All Saints Day is a big deal in a Catholic country like Spain. And it turns out everybody from the pueblos surrounding the city comes in for the long weekend to spend it with their families. So we could not have possibly chosen a worse weekend to come to town without a reservation. But being young and persistent and knowing that it's all gonna work out, we just keep going and we go to another hotel and we ask, and we go to another hotel and we ask, and we're getting tired and we're kind of getting hungry, like shamelessly scraping past pocket lint to get to the extra peanuts, hungry because we don't have any food with us. And by the time we get through like 14 or 15 hotels, I mean, we were feeling like Mary and Joseph, guys. Like, there's no room at the inn. Her water's about to break. And like, by that I mean she really has to pee. And we find a bush, and I'm standing guard as she's like peeing in this bush in a forest. Everybody's we're strangers in a strange land. It just gotta be. And our feet hurt and our backs hurt from carrying our backpacks. And to top it all off, one of her straps on her backpack breaks. And so she's kind of hobbling along, and we're like delusional at this point. We've got these smiles plastered on our face, like, it's all gonna work out okay. We're gonna find a place to sleep. It's all fine, guys, right? And we find this park, and we get a bench, and we just sit down, and we are so stoked because we just got invited to the pity party. And we pull out our 2-liter bottle of Coke and rum that we had mixed rum into when we were in Morocco and we realized it was super illegal that we brought rum into a country that's Muslim. And it's completely flat at this point, but that kind of added to the misery. Like, we kind of liked it because it helped us seethe even more. And these stupid teenagers come into the park and they're just happy. And there's nothing worse when you're pissed off than having to be next to happy people. And they're taking selfies, and they're asking us to take their picture, and we're like, fine, with scowls on our face. And we just seethe in this stupidity, I guess, of ourselves for a while. And we finally kind of work through that, and we go, okay, we gotta come up with a plan. We gotta do something. We can't just sit here all night. Let's find a bar. We'll go get a couple beers, sit in the corner, nurse them until they like kick us out at 4. And then I guess we'll just go to the beach and try and sleep until the sun comes up. So we throw our packs on and we start walking. And we go around the corner and there's like a cheap motel, and we like just ask if we can pay a little money to keep our backpacks there. We drop them off and we go to the bar, and we really want like a real drink, but we want like the certain vibe, right? Like, we're still kind of cranky. So we go into a place that's like dancey. No, we're not doing that. Another place is like too fancy. Okay, we see this place up ahead of us, and it's like a dive, and it's quiet. We go in, and we're just standing there reading the menu for a second, and not 10 seconds later, this guy and this girl walk in, and they say, hey, do they have good drinks here? We're like, we have no idea. We're exchange students, just here for the weekend. They say, no kidding, we're exchange students. We live in Cadiz. Where are you guys from? And so it turns out he's from Germany, and she's from Bulgaria. We're from America, and we're talking, and they're like, well, where are you staying tonight? Oh, well, turns out if you come into town, so before we really get into the story, they look at each other and they go, have you guys ever heard of couch surfing? We have couch surfers basically every weekend and we don't have anybody staying with us this weekend. Would you like to come stay with us for free and like save some money? This is 2011. And when I told my relatives that I was going to study abroad, aside from my parents who were super supportive, every single relative that I told, their first reaction without fail was, have you seen the movie Taken? And like, that might have been going through my mind a little bit, but I hadn't seen Taken still. And I'm not going to lie, like, we immediately said yes, we would stay with these people. But we weren't really dumb about it. I mean, we, you know, I let him walk through the door first and kind of sized him up. He was shorter than me. And Rachel, she's scrappy, but she's like 5 feet tall. Which I like how like that's like 5 feet tall right now. I'm a giant. I wasn't sure how much help she was going to be in a fight. But we sat down, we had a couple drinks, decided they weren't really the kidnapping type. And the next morning, we wind up going to their apartment and meeting they're roommates, and they're all from different countries. And the only language that we all have in common is Spanish, and that's super cool to us. And like one of their roommates is from Italy, and another one's from France, and he winds up making us this most amazing meal that we've had in months because our host mother was a terrible cook. And we see the city through their eyes. Like, they take us to this cool castle and this like old school prison that's like thousands of years old. And they take us to this pier where there's like bar after club after club after bar, and we're doing body shots and learning what that's all about. And we stay there until they kick us out at like 4 a.m, and then we're headed back to their apartment, and we go to another club and we stay drinking and dancing some more until like 6. And we're finally stumbling back to their place, which is like 2 blocks from the beach, and the ocean is calling to us. And so we just run past their door, and we go to the sand, and we strip down to our underwear, and we start swimming. And we swim out to these fishing boats that are anchored not too far from shore. And we sit there, and we watch the sunrise over the sea. And I remember thinking to myself how none of this absolutely incredible day that I'm gonna remember for the rest of my life would have been possible without all of the garbage that we went through the day before. Literally, the thing that was like our last resort, going to the bar till they kicked us out and then sitting on the beach until the sun came up, is like what we were doing, but with such a different mindset and with beautiful strangers that were quickly becoming our friends. And you know, I'm not trying to say like everything happens for a reason, or even that everything is gonna happen the way that you want or work out the way that you want, but I do think that there's so much to this idea that we are raised to believe that strangers are dangerous and that the taken narrative is pretty much what's out there. But if you open yourself up and you take what the universe is throwing you, they're throwing you this line, everything's gonna turn out all right.
Our final storyteller is someone I have known from LC. He was a student at LC. He has this had this great, just natural interest in the world, particularly the world of film. As a teenager, his ability to analyze film and understand it, and he would make these short films in school, and he was always so talented, and he is very talented at talking about movies. When I hear him talk on the radio, he always articulates things that are exactly what I'm thinking in a way that I never would be able to if I had a lot of time to think about it. And oftentimes on the radio, he's talking off the top of his head. So I have a lot of respect for Nathan, who is, you know, not going to analyze. He's going to focus a little bit on plot because he's going to tell a story. Will you please welcome my friend, Nathan Wine, Nathan Weinbender.
Thank you. Before I tell my story, I would like to give a little credit to, I'm not biased at all, but I think we should give a round of applause for our host for the evening, Mark Robbins. Right? He's been great. He's got a lot of charisma. He might have a future. On camera, possibly? All right. It was a February night in 2008 on a movie set about a mile away from where we are right now when I first crossed paths with one of the most important figures in modern political history. Somebody who entered the system and shook it up and made us think differently about the presidency itself. And you're all ahead of me right now. You're right. In 2008, I met Stormy Daniels. Okay? I know, you were all ahead of me. In case you've been living under a rock for the last 4 or 5 months, I'll tell you who Stormy Daniels is. She is an adult film actress who allegedly had an affair with Donald Trump in 2006. And his lawyer gave her hush money in the sum of $130,000 just weeks before the election. So, you know, but it's alleged. It's alleged, so don't know anything. And I told you earlier that we met on a movie set. Your dirty minds are getting ahead of me here. It was not that kind of movie set, the kind of movie set that Stormy Daniels normally is on. No, this was a completely legitimate motion picture called Finding Bliss. Has anyone here seen Finding Bliss? There are literally zero hands raised in the audience. Okay, no one's seen this movie. It's the kind of movie that you see scroll past on your Netflix page and you go, I'll never watch that. I'll give you the plot real quick. It's about a recent film graduate played by the actress Lily Sobieski. And she dreams of being the next great American filmmaker, but she cannot find a job in Hollywood. She's about to give up on her dream until she gets an interview with a movie studio in an editor's position. And she gets to the movie studio, and it turns out, I want everyone to gasp collectively, it's a porn studio. Oh no. But she takes the job anyway, and she like befriends the people that works there, and she falls in love with, I don't know, some boring crap. Who cares? It's a terrible movie. And at the same time, I can kind of relate to the plot, because when I get the job on the movie set, I'm 19 years old, and most of my life I've dreamt about working on a movie set. I'd never been on a movie set before. And I thought, one day I'll walk onto a movie set as like a director or a writer or a producer or an editor or an actor. I don't know, pretty much anything other than what I was actually doing on the set of Finding Bliss, which was I was a production assistant. Now, if you don't know what a production assistant is, or we call them PAs, that's what we Hollywood types call them. Basically, you're the gopher. You're at the bottom of the totem pole. When someone says help, you have to help them. So you're getting coffee orders. You're making sure that everyone's on set at the right time, that everyone has the right script pages. When everyone has like started eating dinner already, that's when you eat dinner. 12 to 16 hour days, I'd watch the sun come up in the morning and go down at night. And it was exhausting, but it seemed rewarding at the time. I thought I can work my way up. And yet this production, Finding Bliss, was disastrous, to put it bluntly. I didn't know that it was disastrous because I'd never been on a movie set before. But it's like that thing where they say you shouldn't be worried about turbulence on a plane unless the flight attendants are freaking out, and then you should freak out. Well, the proverbial flight attendants around me were freaking out. Like, the plane was going down. This was a disastrous production. Like, entire pages of the script were just being cut. They weren't even filming them. We went through three first assistant directors. That's the dude that I have to report to. I went through three of them. Like, it was just insane. And by the end of the second week of this, like, 20 or so day production, I was the only PA left standing. The other ones quit. And I was still there, like, doing whatever. And I had no idea what I was doing. The actors were mostly pretty nice to me, and I know you're wondering, who's in the movie? Well, I mentioned Lily Sobieski earlier. We also had, let's see, who else was in it? Matt Davis, who you don't remember as the jerky boyfriend from Legally Blonde? Anybody? Yeah, okay. We also had Kristen Johnston, who is the tall alien lady on Third Rock from the Sun. You remember her? She was wonderful. She's actually one of the coolest people I've ever met. We also had Jamie Kennedy. Oh, remember him? Exactly. He had like a bad prank show on TV, and he was playing one of the porn actors in the movie, and I think that was supposed to be a joke because he looks like Jamie Kennedy and he's a porn actor. And he was like a complete lunatic. Like, he would just, you'd be talking to him and he'd just like start doing push-ups on the floor, and you're like, all right, whatever. And also, we had Denise Richards, who, while this movie was being filmed, was going through a terrible divorce and custody battle with Charlie Sheen. Remember, they were together for a while? And because of the publicity, she wasn't actually supposed to be outside the state of California, but she was here in Spokane for some reason, making Finding Bliss. Like, I don't know what she was thinking. And she was staying at the DoubleTree, which, by the way, you guys, she was pissed that she had to stay at the DoubleTree. She was like, I played a nuclear physicist in a James Bond movie. I should be staying at a DoubleTree. But she did. And this is the best part. Like, because of the publicity going on around her and Charlie Sheen, she had to stay under a pseudonym, and I still remember this. Her pseudonym was Blair Warner, which fans of 80s television will remember. She was the uptight rich girl on The Facts of Life. You remember that? Thank you. Someone back there does. I just remember that. It was so funny. But because this was a movie that was screaming out for authenticity, it's set in the world of adult film, they brought in actual adult film actors to like play themselves or other people, I don't know. And one of the people they brought in was Ron Jeremy. Okay, footnote, can I do footnotes on like oral, I'm gonna do it anyway. Footnote, this is the part of the story where you lean over to your companion, the person you went with, and pretend that you don't know who Ron Jeremy is. We all know you know who Ron Jeremy is. The Hedgehog himself. That's his actual nickname, the Hedgehog. He shows up for like a one-scene cameo playing himself, and I was really impressed, or actually the lack thereof, of his stamina, and not what you think. He fell asleep in between takes, sitting up on a stool with no back. He just sat there like snoring and sleeping. And we were all standing around taking pictures of Ron Jeremy sleeping on our like old school phones. It was the wallpaper on my flip phone for like a year. He was fine, it's whatever. And then there's Stormy. She shows up. She's a last minute addition to the cast, I guess something opened up and she was able to fly down to Spokane to like light her career on fire by being in Finding Bliss. And I remember I was sent to the DoubleTree that that Blair Warner loved so much, because that's where Stormy was staying. And they told me, they said she's staying there under her real name, Stephanie Clifford. We all know that now because Donald Trump made us know her real name. And they said, just drop off the script pages that she needs for the next day. So I go up to the counter and I say, can you tell me what room Stephanie Clifford is in? And the guy looks on his computer and he says, there's no one here by that name. So I'm freaking out. I'm like, okay. S. Clifford. No one here by that name. And I go, anyone by the last name of Clifford? And he's like, no one here by the name of last name of Clifford. So then I'm like, pseudonym. So I start going through other characters from The Facts of Life. I'm like, Mrs. Garrett, Tootie, anyone? So finally, last ditch effort, I go, Stormy Daniels? And he goes, room 301, right up that way. And I slid the sheets under the door and left. And I thought, that's kind of awesome, right? Like, Denise Richards had to stay under a pseudonym, but Stormy Daniels chose to stay under a pseudonym. Like, that's pretty awesome. So she showed up to set the next day. That was when I first met her. And I recall she mostly stayed in the dressing room in the basement of the studio that we were filming in. She mostly wore like a terry cloth bathrobe and stilettos, you know, that classic ensemble. And I didn't really see her much, but every time I would go down into the dressing room, it was kind of this communal sort of dressing room thing. A lot of the actual Hollywood actors were sitting around and listening to the stories that Stormy was telling, because they wanted to know what it was like to actually work in the industry and be a woman in the industry. And she would tell these stories about, and I don't know if you know this, but not only is she an actress, but she is a director and a producer and has done quite well for herself. And she was telling them these stories about being in the adult film industry, where actually you make more money as a woman than you do as a man. It's like the only industry where you can do that. And they were just kind of listening in you know, rapt attention at what she had to say. But mostly they were kind of coming in and out. And it came to the point where they finally told me, you have to go down and summon Stormy up to the set. I was like, okay. So I go down there and I knock on the door. And I have to be honest that I was a little bit intimidated because I'm like this
scrawny, floppy-haired 19-year-old production assistant. And there's Stormy Daniels, the AVN award-winning star of such classic films as Operation Desert Stormy and The Witches of Brestwick. Remember that one? So I'm like shaking in my boots. I'm like, what? So I knock on the door and she tells me to come in. She's the only one in there and she's still wearing her terry cloth robe and her stilettos. And I say, Stormy, I can't remember if I said Stormy or Ms. Daniels, but whatever. I said, they need you up on set. And so we share this walk together, just the two of us. And I say, how are you? And she starts telling me about how she has family from this area, and she's actually been to Spokane before. And, you know, she doesn't really mind the cold weather. She actually kind of likes it. And, wow, this part of the country is so beautiful, isn't it? And how long have you been here? And how are you hanging in there? And are you doing okay? And eventually our very brief conversation ends, and we're at the end of the hallway, and she goes to the closed set where she's going to be slobbered all over by Jamie Kennedy, which I'm sure was the height of both of their careers. And she filmed her scene and she was done. That was it. She left the next day. And I'll be honest, like, I haven't thought about Stormy Daniels until she showed up in the news again in January for these weird circumstances. And everyone was laughing about it. Everyone was like, can you believe that the president maybe raw-dogged a porn star and, like, paid her off? Like, it's crazy. And all I thought of was, like, oh, I know Stormy. Like, she was really nice to me. Like, she has family from here. She seems cool. And so if you ever happen to watch Finding Bliss, which I do not recommend, it's so bad. If you do watch it and you get to the end and you watch the credits, you will see her name there and it says Stormy Daniels as herself, like black and white, very defiant. And you think, you know, for better or worse, her name is now part of contemporary political history. And if you keep watching past The Best Boy and The Grip and The Boom Mic Operator and The Caterers and the people that drove the vans and like some guy named Steve or something like that, like if you keep watching all the way down, you'll eventually see my name too. It's right there in the credits, right along with Stormy's. And my name, it's misspelled. Thank you.
I feel bad that I mispronounced your name because I forgot that that was the last line of the story. I feel like a jerk. I'm sorry. Will you please help me in thanking all six of the great storytellers tonight? I hope that you tell other people about this and that you come back again sometime to this or another event. Thanks. You guys have been a great audience. I am very proud to be a part of it. Thanks.
Mark Robbins, the host for this May 3rd edition of Pivot Spokane, which can be reached just by Googling Pivot Spokane. Tonight we heard from Samantha Wolfheil and Nathan Weinbender. The previous two nights in order we had heard from Mike Malsom, Micah Maloney, Mallory Whitaker, and Aaron Robinson. Tomorrow night, we begin a book on the bookshelf, and that's E.M. Forrester's A Room with a View, read by Mike Ailman. Podcasts of the Pivot Stories may be accessed at our website, spokanepublicradio.org, under podcasts.